This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, the open enrollment period is now open for people to buy health insurance on the Affordable Care Act marketplace. We'll talk to a Wisconsin healthcare advocate about this year's process and the impact COVID-19 has had on the system. First, another senior Trump administration official is out of a post today via tweet. Trump effectively fired Chris Krebs, director of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, last night. That was after Krebs affirmed the 2020 general election was safe and accurate, contrary to what the president has been pushing without evidence. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How are you viewing President Trump's actions since the election? Do you think the White House should cooperate with the incoming Biden administration, especially on issues like COVID-19 and vaccine distribution? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. It's the week in Washington. We're looking at several stories in national politics, including the one we just mentioned. Lauren Gambino is a senior political reporter for The Guardian covering the 2020 presidential campaign. Lauren, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, your assignment to cover the 2020 presidential campaign, not quite ready to wind it down yet, I guess.
We are still going. There's lots left to cover.
Well, let's get to this this latest firing. Some top Defense Department officials, Homeland Security officials have been removed by the Trump administration since Election Day. What do we know about Chris Krebs and this election security post that he had held?
So in this role, he had really staked out a position, especially recently, that clashed with the president. He was adamant that the elections had... there was not widespread fraud like the president was claiming. And he was very, he had this blog where he would counter rumors that often Trump and his allies were amplifying. And so he was sort of seen as very vulnerable within his office. He had expected this. We've been reading allies say this was coming for some time, just because he was taking such a public stand to try to say our elections were secure, they were safe, you can trust the result. Obviously, the president has yet to concede. And he has been, as you mentioned, baselessly amplifying claims of widespread voter fraud, and he's taking action in several states to try to contest the results there. And so, this was sort of the latest escalation of that fight by the president and the president's campaign.
What kind of reaction have we seen, especially from Republicans in the Senate? I see there's been some praise of Krebs, at least on his way out.
Yeah, it's such a partisan moment. And what we know about Krebs is that he was actually someone who was seen by both parties as, as just good at his job, a trusted figure, and someone who could work with all the parties at a particularly polarized moment. And so he has received some praise from both Republicans and Democrats, who did say they appreciated working with him. They appreciated that he was honest and forthright and just very blunt about what needed to be done to secure the elections and sort of what had happened. He was just very, very forthright about how he viewed the election and election security.
Staying with what the Trump campaign now is doing since Election Day, they've been involved in a lot of court filings and cases in states around the country. Really, Pennsylvania has been one of the big stories. What are some of the latest developments you're watching?
So, as you said, Pennsylvania was sort of ground zero. We were watching that yesterday because Rudy Giuliani was in court. It's the first time he's really been in court in several years for him, and he just did not seem to know exactly what was going on. He was met with serious skepticism from the judges in that case. Republicans lost a case before the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. We also saw yesterday in Michigan kind of an extraordinary scene play out there where two members of Michigan's elections board, two Republicans, refused to certify the results in this obviously incredibly important swing state. And then there was massive backlash and uproar, and they immediately changed and voted to certify the results. But it was just seen as really sort of an extraordinary step in the depths that Trump and his allies are going to try to at least delay certification of this election, which, you know, by all accounts, Joe Biden won.
And another story you've been following, I know, and wrote about, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham just reelected, called Georgia's Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger and asked about signatures on mail-in ballots and whether that he raised the issue, according to Raffensperger, of whether that could be cause to discard whole collections of ballots. I want to give a listen, first of all, to Georgia's Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger speaking to CNN.
I asked if the ballots could be matched back to the voters, and then I got the sense it implied that then you could throw those out. And he really would look at the counties with the highest frequent error of signatures.
And then I want to give a listen to Senator Graham explaining himself here and responding to criticism of the actions also from CNN.
What I'm very concerned about is that if you're going to continue to vote by mail, that we need to know what systems work and what don't. It's up to the people of Georgia. But I think I have every right in the world to reach out and say, how does it work? And that's what I did. It's really, I thought, a pretty good conversation. So,
I mean, he thinks it's an implicit threat.
You know, I categorically reject that. That wasn't my intent, and that wasn't the purpose of the conversation, to throw out ballots. We're talking about an election we haven't even had yet, which is the Senate races. That was my focus.
So we have people saying, hey, wait, why is this senator from South Carolina trying to get ballots tossed out in Georgia? Senator Graham saying, no, I'm just checking out the process here. What else do we need to know about this story, Lauren?
It's difficult because, it, as you just showed, it's sort of a he said situation. However, we do know, Raffensperger has been under immense pressure from the president on down. This is a Republican election official who's now suddenly, in the middle of this massive intra-party fight. And he is saying that Graham seemed to suggest something incredibly undemocratic. Graham, we should note, is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. So this would be sort of an extraordinary step for someone in that role to even suggest tossing out legally cast ballots. We know there's some Democrats, notably Hakeem Jeffries in the House, who have called for Graham to be investigated over this to try to get to the bottom of what was said and what was suggested. Republicans are defending him. It's saying, we just want to know that the system works. And he was just doing due diligence, trying to understand what was happening in these various states where there have been these claims, again, most of them unfounded as far as we know. But there are also different ethics groups who've even gone as far as to call for Graham's resignation over this. So we'll see where that goes, if there's sort of any repercussions from this. But as far as we know right now, Graham is saying that wasn't his intent, and he's just trying to get to the bottom of mail-in balloting and whether it's safe.
It's the Week in Washington, our every Wednesday-ly look at the top stories in national politics. Lauren Gambino with us from The Guardian. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of what you're seeing since Election Day from the Trump administration, from President-elect Biden's team, and what do you want to see from either or both? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Tom is with us now in Madison. Tom, hi.
Good afternoon. I think we are seeing a perfect example here of the fact that Donald Trump never really advanced mentally beyond toddler status. He is just a spoiled little child, and, he's behaving like one. And as far as Lindsey Graham goes, the only election he needs to pay attention to are those in South Carolina. He needs to be removed from office.
Tom, thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. And Lauren, I think a lot of people trying to psychologize about the president's motivations right now. What kind of things are you hearing people talk about as they try to figure out where the president's going with this election? Oop, Lauren, are you there? Uh, Missing our guest, Lauren Gambino from The Guardian. You can join in our Week in Washington conversation at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on the latest in national politics, what you're seeing from the Trump and Biden campaigns. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. We'll continue the conversation, hopefully, with guest on the line coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Lauren Gambino, senior political reporter at The Guardian, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. In just a moment, we'll turn to what the Biden team is doing as they start to work toward Inauguration Day in January. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to hear from Biden? Who do you want to see in top positions of authority, cabinet picks, and things like that? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Lauren, before we move to the Biden team, let's talk about our caller before the break. Said this is basically just a personality issue with President Trump not wanting to acknowledge a loss. A lot of people try to figure out the president's motivations, his next course of action here, whether he's gearing up for a 2024 run. Can you tell us about some of the speculation around Washington, given that the only one who knows what's in the president's head is the president himself?
Yes, I would not want to say I know exactly what he's thinking, but I'm certainly this is someone who, you know, one of his favorite insults is loser. He really doesn't like people around him who he considers losers. And I think the idea of losing an election is just so, you know, so oppositional to what he believes. And I think this is really, yes, I think you can guess that it's really difficult for him personally. You know, at the same time, he has been laying the groundwork to claim that the election was perhaps that fraud played a role in this election. Even well before, you know, ballots went out, he was talking about problems with mail-in balloting that weren't supported by the evidence we had about mail-in balloting. And he was claiming that, you know, there might be possible instances of fraud. So we do know that he was preparing for this eventuality. And that's why I think it's important to consider that context when we see his campaign in some of these states try to delay or even overturn the results there.
Let's bring out another caller now at 800-642-1234. Moose with us in northern Minnesota. Moose, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. What do you want to bring up?
Well, I want to applaud Chris Krebs for his integrity and courage to do his job, even though he was fired for doing so. And I think it's important to note, in this election cycle, and especially in our pandemic response, that history is going to be watching. And it's important for all of us to step up like this man has and do the right thing. We're living in a world where immigrants are termed criminals, that without proof or evidence that there's judgments made. And I think it's important for us to fall back on evidence and fact rather than just our emotions. In terms of what's happening next, I don't imagine what's going on in anybody else's mind, with the exception of everybody's really getting tired of hearing about non-concession and fraud without proof.
Moose, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Lauren, that said, there's a pretty big alternative media infrastructure advancing exactly that narrative of fraud. People are going to be talking about this one way or another for a while, aren't they?
Yes, that's exactly right. And I think that's one of Joe Biden's biggest challenges coming into office. He's got to, you know, he said he wants to unite the nation, but, you know, he's working with with this sort of alternative media environment where they pump out these, you know, sometimes downright conspiracy theories, sometimes misinformation or sort of, you know, information lacking context. And he's got to contend with that because there are plenty of, you know, more than 73 million Americans voted for Donald Trump. And at least some of them do believe that, you know, they don't believe that he lost the election. And so, I, you know, that's something that Biden will have to contend with.
Thanks for that call, Moose. We'll go now to David in Grand Marsh. David, hi.
Hello there. You know, I just had a thought in this election has gone and where we're at now. And I just don't see the harm in including the Biden administration in with the briefings, the security clearance briefings, and the COVID pandemic strategy for the serum or for the vaccines and stuff. Why not bring those people on board and let the, you know, the court or whatever Trump is doing to get his, you know, final answer on the election, let that run its course. But I just don't understand how all these Republicans in office right now don't see the harm doing to this country.
David, thanks a lot for the call. David hitting Lauren on a big issue that's been raised over the last couple of days, a possible risk to vaccine distribution if the new administration isn't getting information starting pretty soon. What are we hearing about that?
Biden just said that again today, that he's worried about not having, you know, enough information coming into his presidency about vaccine distribution. He said, you know, this could, not knowing and not being able to prepare and plan now, could delay vaccine distribution by weeks or even months. So we know this is, you know, a really big concern for the Biden transition team. But also, you know, increasingly we are seeing Republicans start to say, at least some on Capitol Hill start to say, that they think that Biden should have access to this information. He should be included. And I have to believe, you know, that those calls will grow as this gets closer and closer to, you know, to Inauguration Day. And there's obviously deadlines before then. But I think, you know, you are starting to hear Republicans. So the caller makes a great point. And, you know, this is something that's happened every 4 years for hundreds of years. So hopefully the Trump campaign will recognize and allow an orderly transition of power so we don't have to worry about, delayed vaccine distribution.
Thanks for that call. Staying, I think, with the Biden transition, Mike joins us now in Oconomowoc. Mike, hello.
Hi. I had a question regarding the Biden team's economy take. I haven't heard a whole lot about this. My only concern right now is that we clearly have a Trump-driven economy, not dealing with the COVID, but everything post-Obama era. He brought this economy to bear. Everybody is reeling well off of it, even during this COVID. Gas prices are at all-time lows since probably, the early 90s. So what has the Biden team talked about? How are they going to keep this economy steamrolling forward and upward so that we see this benefit all of us who are continuing to work every day and put gas in our cars?
I gotcha, Mike. Thanks for the call. Lauren, what are we hearing from Biden and his team so far on economic issues?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the way the Biden team sees it, they believe that the economy is tied to controlling the coronavirus. So they don't think that the economy can really, you know, have an economic revival until, until everyone across the country feels more comfortable about going outside their home, you know, and they're kind of expecting it's going to take possibly a vaccine. So we're looking at probably several more months before businesses can really feel comfortable opening entirely and you've got, you know, members of the public willing to go out and spend money publicly. So that's kind of the front end of their plan. But Biden has laid out a fairly ambitious economic agenda, which includes a lot of climate proposals, elements of, you know, trying to tackle racial injustice as part of his economic vision. So, you know, fairly ambitious. It's something that, you know, both sides of his party have agreed to, but it definitely will be something that Republicans push back on him over when he tries to implement this. But he does have a plan that, you know, it's sort of based around reviving manufacturing, really investing in American-made manufacturing, and trying to really kickstart sort of a green economy and green jobs. So we'll see how far he's able to get with that, but that is the agenda he's laid out.
Thanks a lot for that call. In our last couple of minutes, Lauren, Democrats happy about the outcome at the top of the ticket, but they lost seats in the House, didn't have an outside chance of taking the Senate, depending on what goes on in Georgia. That is not what they were hoping for. There are some recriminations between different wings of the party. What kind of things are we hearing there?
Yes, moderates and progressives are really having it out. You know, they kind of came together to oppose Donald Trump. But now that we see all the results are coming in and you see what happened, moderates believe that progressives went too far, embracing this idea of defunding the police. And they're blaming them for, you know, really supporting slogans that just don't work in more conservative or swing districts that some of these members represent. Progressives are saying, you know, moderate members, they need to have bigger visions and be more ambitious and be much more strong and have their own brands that they can withstand some of these Republican attacks on them. So it's really difficult because I think the results sort of give something for everyone to cling to. You know, progressives can point to some big cities where they saw, you know, turnout really increase. But moderates can also point to, you know, some of their biggest gains were in the suburbs, these more moderate swing districts. So it's going to be a fight we're going to see play out. I think we'll see it play out big time in the Georgia runoffs, where you're probably going to need a base turnout for Democrats plus a lot of enthusiasm in the suburbs for Democrats to even hope they can win these seats.
Briefly, as we wrap up, Lauren, what story do you have your eye on next?
Actually, just as we were talking about, I'm really watching how the Georgia Senate race comes together, because it's just a really interesting test of both parties in this sort of post-Trump era, I think.
Lauren, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thank you so much.
Lauren Gambino is senior political reporter for The Guardian. She's been covering the 2020 presidential campaign and its aftermath. We've talked about some of the top national political stories, including President Trump's continuing battle against the election results and how Biden's camp is moving forward, plus Democratic Party reaction. Coming up after the news, it's the open enrollment period for health care coverage under the Affordable Care Act marketplaces around the country. A Wisconsin expert joins the show with advice on who can and should apply and what kind of changes to watch out for next year. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 6 on The Morning Show, our gardens are done for the winter, but we can still keep gardening. Kate Archer-Kent and her guests tell us how to do some indoor gardening in the off-season. That's tomorrow morning at 6 here on the Ideas Network. Now, it's the open enrollment period now to buy health insurance on the Affordable Care Act marketplace for 2021. The enrollment period goes to December 15th, but some experts say it makes sense to get started now. And the COVID-19 pandemic has raised the stakes this year as many people lost insurance through their workplaces. Our next guest is a healthcare advocate and legal expert joining us for a look at how to sign up this year and some of the logistical issues facing the marketplace. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about this year's open enrollment period? Have you purchased insurance on the marketplace? What was your experience like? How has COVID-19 impacted how you get coverage? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Bobby Peterson is executive director of ABC for Health. Bobby, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Well, a question holds from past years' enrollment periods, Bobby. It might look like there's a chance that the Affordable Care Act won't be around next year. Should people who need coverage proceed as though it will be?
Absolutely. I think it's full steam ahead. There should be no hesitation at this point. I mean, coverage is available. There's no decision from the court. And if it happens, it's not going to be until well into 2021 in June probably. And it's unlikely, at least at this point, you never know, but it doesn't seem as though the court's going to completely dismantle the Affordable Care Act at this point. So I'm cautiously optimistic. I think people should be looking for coverage now, particularly now during a time of COVID when healthcare is so essential for people. If you don't have insurance, if you're losing insurance, by all means, take a look and see what might be available for yourself or your family.
Now, there's a decent number of people who've had long-term unemployment because of COVID and its economic disruptions. Is that expected, Bobby, to create more demand for coverage under the marketplace?
Well, it sure seems like it should. I mean, I think that for the most part, when we're looking at people that are losing their jobs, I mean, in this country, we have such a strong employer base to our health insurance that suggests that people are going to be losing their health insurance coverage. So it's an opportunity to pivot into something that could be quite affordable, either through the marketplace with affordable tax credits that are available, or perhaps even Badger Care Plus. So it's a good opportunity to assess your income. It could drop for the month that you're in, might open up a period of eligibility. It's very important. But I think the most important thing right now is that we're in open enrollment, so there's no reason to hesitate to look for coverage for 2021. The open enrollment period between, it started back on November 1st through December 15th, provides a great opportunity for people to pick a plan and to make some plans for 2021.
Talking to Bobby Peterson, Executive Director of ABC for Health, looking at the open enrollment period, which is now, for marketplace coverage, healthcare coverage under the Affordable Care Act. You could join in with your questions or maybe share your experiences of applying yourself at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's get into just some of the basics here, Bobby, for maybe that person who hasn't, the Affordable Care Act hasn't been on their radar, the marketplace hasn't been on their radar in the past because they had coverage through work. Now they don't. How do they get started?
Well, a really great place to start is to take a look at the website. It's wiscovered.com. It provides a lot of information, how to get started, common questions, how to get expert help to get you through the process. But I think for people that are losing their jobs and maybe losing their employer-sponsored coverage, it's a real great opportunity to pivot to get some essential coverage. I mean, the marketplace provides the essential health benefits that are required under the Affordable Care Act. It provides you with some level of security. It's easy to get misled. There have been some emails out today from the insurance commissioner and Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protection about scams. So I think we need to really be careful about going to websites or responding to some robocalls that are trying to get you into insurance at really rock-bottom prices that might be too good to be true. I think if you go through WISCOVERED, you can find the resources and the help to get you through a rough patch that might be unemployment during this period of COVID. Things are starting to slow down again, and health coverage is really important, either through the marketplace or even Badger Care Plus.
And let's follow that thread of plans that might not be all they're cracked up to be. I see in the news there are advertisements for something called Trump Care, which is not actually a thing, but it's something that is being used to try to sell people, as you said, low-priced insurance that doesn't really do much. Is that a phrase? It doesn't have anything to do with Donald Trump or his administration, even, I understand. Should that be a red flag for people?
Absolutely. I think, it's the old saying, if it's too good to be true, it's probably not true. Health insurance is not cheap. If you want to have decent coverage that's going to take care of yourself and your family for major health issues, it's going to cost some money. Now, there's great subsidies that are available through the marketplace. There's great support available through Badger Care Plus. If your income is really dropping, there's opportunities to get very affordable healthcare coverage. But don't get scammed. I mean, be very careful, be cautious. I think your best bet is to go through the marketplace. And you can even talk to your local insurance agent or broker. They can get you into good plans as well. So, you know, talk to people that you trust. Be careful of those phone calls and scams. It's just not worth it. You're going to end up feeling worse than better.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Mary is on the line in Monroe. Mary, hello.
Yes, hello. I guess the thing that has always frustrated me and I have found about the Affordable Care Act is in order to apply for it, you have to project what your income is going to be in the following year to be eligible for the subsidies. And being self-employed and being on the edge of what the subsidy cap is, if I were to make maybe $1,000 or $2,000 or $3,000 accidentally more next year, then all of a sudden I understand all those subsidies are at risk and I'd have to pay it all back. And that's a real scary thing to think that I'd have to pay, I don't know, $10,000, $12,000, $18,000 back because I underestimated my income by a couple of thousand dollars.
Interesting, Mary. Thank you so much for sharing that. What would you say that, Bobby, to somebody in Mary's situation?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, it's important to stay on top of it. You have the opportunity to, Badger Care or Medicaid to report income changes and for the marketplace changes in your income so that you can get your subsidy adjusted. It's something that, you know, it's difficult to project what it's going to be like going forward for a lot of people. I mean, especially with employment up and down and people losing jobs. So it is, I mean, I think Mary provided us with some good insights, but I think the takeaway is pay attention to what your income is and report it. Make sure you're reporting it accurately as it changes. So you might be reporting it now, but you'll have an opportunity in February or March to submit information and to report income changes if you need to.
Mary, thanks a lot for that call, and good luck navigating that. Well, Bobby, I asked you about first-timers checking out the marketplace. How about people who have been in the system for a year or more years? Should they just let it ride with whatever they've got now, or is it worth revisiting their options?
It's definitely worth revisiting your options because things are changing. We're seeing some prices that are lower than in previous years in the marketplace. Part of what has happened with COVID is that a lot of normal care that people have needed hasn't been provided, and the insurance companies haven't had to pay out as much in expenses, so they're dropping some of their prices. It's a good idea to go in, shop around, see what's available, see what's best for you and your family, make sure the networks haven't changed, you're seeing the doctors and the facilities that you want to go to. We would highly recommend going in and taking a look. Think of it as your annual health benefits checkup. You know, you might go in for your annual physical, but you also need to evaluate your health benefits at least once a year, and probably more if you're in the marketplace. You know, what's your income? Has your family size changed? Did you lose your job? There's a lot of things that change over the course of the year that could impact your coverage, and it's important to evaluate it when those changes occur. So we've been trying to reinforce to people, think about that health benefits checkup at least once a year, but probably a couple times a year, just to evaluate and make sure you're still on the right track.
We're talking about this year's open enrollment period on the healthcare marketplace with Bobby Peterson, Executive Director of ABC for Health, based here in Wisconsin. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you gotten coverage yourself under the marketplace? What's your experience been like? What questions do you have about this year's open enrollment period? What kind of changes there are in the works? And how has the COVID-19 pandemic affected your decision to get health care and where you look for it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about this year's open enrollment period on the healthcare marketplace with Bobby Peterson, executive director of the group ABC for Health. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about how it works, if it's the thing that you might want to check out, if you have experience on either end of this, if you have received coverage under the marketplace, if you're somebody who works in the industry. Love to hear your perspective on this. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's bring on another caller now. Mark is with us in Green Bay. Mark, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to ask about, Mark?
Following up on the previous caller, what if you pay the higher premium and then you find out that you did qualify for a tax credit, a credit at the end of the year? Will they apply that retroactively?
Yeah, my understanding is that you should be able to reconcile that in your taxes at the end of the year. So what happens with what Mary was describing is the unpleasant discovery that you may have paid too little, so that you're not you're going to have to pay back. But if, as you're suggesting, if you go through the process and determine that, you know, perhaps your income was lower than expected, it may result in additional tax credits that you're eligible to receive.
Mark, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Cordy now, calling from Frederick. Cordy, hi.
Hello. Thank you for having this program today. And I just want to mention that, you know, kudos to Central Time. It's one of my very favorite programs.
Oh, thank you.
Employed. You're welcome. I listen to you every day that I can. I work out of our home, but I try to get my work done on time to hear your program. So I'm happy you're having this one today. And I have a concern as a self-employed person. 2 years ago, my husband retired, so I was no longer covered under his insurance. And so I went to the marketplace and got what I thought was some really good help on the phone. But one thing concerned me at the time, they were only asking me about my personal income, and they gave me my quote based on that. And I gave them accurate information. I'm really good about my tax reporting. But I did stress that I was concerned that they weren't asking about our household income, but they said, nope, we just want to look at yours. So I wound up with a pretty good program, I thought, for my son who was in college and myself. By the way, he goes to UW Madison and loved it there. But what happened when I went to do my tax filing at the end of the year, I owed the government $14,028 because something happened in that program where I was getting my premium where we should have been paying more. So this past year, I had to cancel my plan. I'm afraid to get, even to investigate getting insurance, especially since I'm paying back the IRS right now. I really can't afford to do both. So my concern is about the training going on with this people or with the people there, that they asked me the wrong questions, or did they? I don't know what happened, but I can't get insurance this year because I have to pay back the IRS first.
Ooh, that's scary. Cordy, thank you for sharing that experience. Bobby, is it the individual income or the household income that they're going to consider there?
Well, they're probably going to be looking at the household income, the situation that she was discussing, because she was looking for coverage for the household. So that's unfortunate that that happened to her. I think I would encourage her. You know, there are mistakes that are made, and I think it's a process, you know, where you can get additional help from a navigator or CAC or your broker. But we've seen mistakes made in the past as well, and it's really difficult. But I think, you know, with some due diligence and some review, we can take care of some of them. There's appeal processes and things that you can do. It's always going to come down to a matter of proof. So keeping good documentation, keeping a good paper trail of your conversations and communications, you may be able to file an appeal. But I mean, the best bet is really to be careful on the front end, and you know, to talk to your broker or your agent, and talk to a navigator that's gone through the federal training, CAC, and get some double checks on the system.
Cordy, thanks a lot for calling in, and good luck to you as you hopefully get that sorted out. We also got an email from Stacy in Hudson who says, my husband retired, and I can't be on Medicare yet. The ACA seems to be considering all income, including his retirement benefits, and makes the rates prohibitively expensive for us. Feels like a flaw in the ACA. Bobby, I know there's talk all the time about, overturning the ACA completely, but also people talk about needing to tweak some changes in it. Is that something that you think might need to be revisited?
Yeah, we know that the ACA is imperfect, and there's some things that have needed fixing for many, many years. And, looking at family income versus individual income is one of those that sometimes causes problems for people. And it's usually in the area of affordability, what you're eligible for in the tax credits. But that's an unfortunate fix that needs to happen. And I think that for the most part, we're hopeful, we're cautiously optimistic that in the years ahead, we're going to be able to fix some of these glaring problems in the ACA, because as we said, it's imperfect. But there's ways that we can help improve it, and we just haven't done much in the last, 4, 5, 6 years, really, to improve the process, and it needs some help.
Talking to Bobby Peterson from the group ABC for Health, looking at the current enrollment period for health coverage under the Affordable Care Act marketplace. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Now, this is the time when anybody can check this out and sign up for coverage. But Bobby, I understand there are certain life events where people can change their coverage or apply for coverage any time of year. What kind of things would qualify for that?
Yeah. For example, if you lose your job and you lose your health insurance coverage, that triggers a special enrollment period. Getting married can trigger a special enrollment period. Having, a child or adopting a child can trigger special enrollment periods. So there's a number of events outside of open enrollment that you don't have to, if you don't have an issue during the open enrollment period, but soon afterwards you lose your job and you're losing your health insurance coverage, you still have an opportunity to enroll through a special enrollment period. And it's an opportunity to get pretty decent coverage.
I mentioned at the outset, Bobby, I've heard some people say, yes, the deadline's December 15th. No, don't wait until December to start working on this. There's not a lot of money put into the Navigators program to help people out this year, so they might be overwhelmed as crunch time comes along. What would you say to people about getting started early if they're interested in checking this out?
Yeah, I think it's really important to get prepared, do it as early as you can. Don't wait to the last minute, because there is going to be more of a crunch, and that's typically when crunch time occurs, that last week, and people are really busy. So the extra help that you might need, or helping to sort through income issues or coverage issues and things that, as you're evaluating plans, get it done early and, start working on it now if at all possible.
And I remember, Bobby, at some points, concerns that certain regions of Wisconsin and elsewhere in the country might not have a local provider or not a lot of alternatives for local options for marketplace coverage. What are we seeing in Wisconsin as we head into 2021?
I think we've got pretty good coverage statewide. So this is, I think there's options in every county, and I think that generally, there's some maybe exceptions where it's a little more limited, but generally across the state, you're going to find coverage opportunities for yourself and for your family members.
And as we start to wrap up, Bobby, last advice for people who are, not sure if this is for them.
I think it's definitely worth investigating. Talk to your brokers, talk to Navigators, gather information. Go to wiscover.com. It's a great place to just do some review of what some of the opportunities are, and then you can window shop on the marketplace through healthcare.gov.
Thanks again for joining us today.
You're welcome. Glad to do it.
Bobby Peterson is the executive director of ABC for Health, based here in Wisconsin. He joins us today for a look at the open enrollment period and how people can navigate the Affordable Care Act marketplace during the COVID-19 pandemic. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, Governor Evers offered new COVID legislation and Republicans in the state assembly laid out some of their ideas. But will any of it go anywhere? We'll get some analysis and you can join in with your thoughts. The outgoing president and his supporters are making unprecedented and largely unsupported claims of large-scale voting fraud as they contest the outcome of the election. A media columnist says this is uncharted territory for news outlets and shares advice on how to cover it. A conservative writer tells us that a Biden presidency won't be as bad as some of his conservative colleagues might think. And it's time to break out the toys. We'll meet the newest inductees at the National Toy Hall of Fame, and you can join in with your all-time favorites. That's always a fun conversation each year. That's all coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Today marks a pivotal moment in American history that affects our daily lives and that helped give this radio show its name. As reported at history.com, on this day in 1883, a consortium of railroad companies started using four time zones in the United States and Canada. So that meant they would use the same time in every community within a single time zone, just like we do now. This wasn't binding on everybody, but the new zones came to be more and more accepted. Why railroads? Well, they were sending trains across states and across the country from town to town and trying to keep them on a reliable schedule. The only problem, all those towns and cities and counties were setting their own clocks to their own schedules. Well into the 1880s, communities would set their clocks based on their local observation of the sun. They built it around their local high noon. That's perfectly fine for local use. If you're going to go from your local farm to the general store, you stayed on the same clock. If you're traveling by the speed of horse, a little variation from one place to another didn't make a whole lot of difference. But once you started crossing county and state lines at the speed of 1880s trains, those little differences could really add up. The railroad companies were powerful, but their time zone decision was really only binding at their train stations. But that decision in 1883 caught on, and in 1918, Congress voted to make the time zones a real deal at the federal level. So now I can say, this is Central Time on the Ideas Network.